Today's program was brought to you by Blueprint, the original juice cleanse program to offer different levels of intensity depending on your needs and current diet. For more information, visit blueprint.com. You're listening to heritageradionetwork.org, a nonprofit, member-supported radio station. We're millions strong, with folks tuning in from over 200 countries. We are education. We are entertainment. We are the future of food. May is our membership drive. Become a member and support us while receiving e-newsletters, advanced invites, special discounts, and a membership card. We need your support. Visit our website and click the donate button to become a member today. Thank you for believing in us and enjoy the show.
Good afternoon, everyone. This is Phil Colicchio, and it's Wednesday at 5 p.m. That means you are listening to the business of the business here on the Heritage Radio Network. This is the show that explores the business side of the restaurant and hospitality industries. And we talk about restaurants. We talk about chefs. We talk about hospitality. We talk about entertainment. And we're going to go a little bit off script today, which is my prerogative as a host. You should all know that if you miss this broadcast, and it would be a terrible shame if you missed this broadcast, you can go to our archive at www.heritageradionetwork.org and click onto the Business of the Business icon, or you can find us as a podcast on iTunes. iTunes is a great lead-in to what we're going to talk about today. If you've listened to the show before, and I know hundreds upon hundreds of thousands of you have, we've talked about the change in the hospitality industry over the last 10 years. It's not just been restaurants. It's been hotels. Last week, we had a cutting-edge hotelier telling us that, you know, hotels have become lounges with bedrooms. It's become more about sustaining the entertainment factor. And I think those of us who are paying attention know that hospitality really is entertainment. Well, today I've got an entertainer who understands hospitality from the ground up. I can't tell you how excited I am to have my musical crush. Noel Skaggs, the co-lead singer of the band Fits and the Tantrums. We've got her out here to Brooklyn today. I can't tell you how psyched I am, Noel. It's great to see you.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
Oh, man. It's my distinct pleasure. And I wish you could see Noel today. She instinctively knew that today was goth. Was goth day. And she's put on some form-fitting black wear.
Hey,
right, a Brooklyn hipster from L.A. She knows exactly how to change it up. Before we go into your experience with hospitality and your love of restaurants and all things food and food preparation related, I want to let everybody know that you and the group have a new album out.
Yes.
It's really only been out. It's still in its first month, right?
Yeah, it's in its first month. It came out actually on May 7th. The album's called More Than Just a Dream.
More Than Just a Dream. You can hear lots of the tunes going onto the website.
Yeah, right? You can go onto the website and you know, kind of stream a lot of the new songs and stuff. It's fitsandthetantrums.com.
Right.
And you can also, you know, check it out on iTunes. They let you do previews, Amazon. All kinds of things now.
I highly recommend going to listen to Noel sing before you listen to me talk when you go to iTunes. I've seen Noel sing several times live. The beautiful young lady sitting next to me in the studio transforms herself into effectively something between Mick Jagger and Tina Turner.
I like
when
that.
When she is on stage. and brings an energy to a venue that is really unique. Where did that style develop? Because you really are not. You don't walk around preening, you know. How did that style develop?
I think for me, it really kind of absorbed what I was watching kind of growing up. Yeah. I used to watch a lot of hip-hop artists perform. I used to hang around a lot of hip-hop artists. And actually, one of my favorite clubs to go to when I was, you know, a teenager was this place called The Root Down. I had nobody's business being in there because it was 21 and over, but I managed to always somehow get snuck into this club.
Sounds like the name of a restaurant. It sounds like the name of a sustainable restaurant,
yeah,
doesn't it?
Called The Root Down. It's actually one of the most historic kind of clubs for DJs and hip-hop artists. I mean, everybody from the Black Eyed Peas to Dilated Peoples and all these different artists came up in that particular club.
That's an L.A. club,
and
right?
L.A. club. It's no longer in existence. They still do kind of...
Shame
yeah, it's a shame with that, but they still do their anniversaries and stuff. But I used to love watching these performers rock a crowd.
Yeah.
You know, it was... always energetic. They were always, you know, feeding off of the crowds, you know, clapping, singing along to the lyrics. There was always something about that that really inspired me as a performer. And I think that's really what kind of translates.
Right.
I used to have the nickname called the B-girl with the golden voice that I was crowned by a lot of my DJ friends in the hip hop world. And, you know, I've always taken that with me in performance, you know.
Well, that's funny because I hear you sing and hip hop does not leap out in your singing style.
Yeah.
But the influence clearly is, you know, there's plenty of beat to your music.
Oh yeah, absolutely.
Now, you also write. I mean, you don't just belt it out. You spend a lot of time writing. Where did that develop?
Another thing with growing up and just listening to records constantly. I don't know. I always took a liking to writing down the lyrics of all of my favorite songs when I was growing up. Everything from, you know, a disco cut to another hip hop song.
Right.
Listening to the cadences, the way that people spoke, you know, the way that they sang certain verbs or whatever it was, you know, like I was always really attracted to that and just rhyming. And I really learned how to write a song based upon that.
You know, that's, you know, I'm smiling as you're talking because my family grew up, I'm musically challenged, but I used to be able to sing a little bit, but I was always floored by phrasing.
Yeah.
Singer's phrasing is always what really caught me. And, you know, my career didn't move in the direction that yours moved. But what I noted was is that people with, you know, with an artistic bent, and whether it be in music, whether it be in food, the ones who are successful really do treat it as a craft.
Yeah.
And we were joking earlier that your first single that you put out was called Craft.
The Craft.
The Craft.
Yeah.
Which is the first restaurant that that my cousin Tom opened in his own name, which is kind of funny. And I knew that there was some spiritual connection there for us.
Very cool.
So there you go. Now, what do you think? Do you think that putting out a record like that, your first one, you've worked in restaurants and you've worked in clubs.
Yeah.
You actually opened a restaurant, didn't you?
Actually, I didn't personally.
No, I mean,
yeah,
but part of the team.
Part of the team and opening up a restaurant. Actually, both my experiences in the hospitality industry in that world of the restaurant business was opening a place and watching it go from literally polishing the glasses to having the meetings about the wine and the vodka, depending on whatever the bar was carrying,
right.
Looking at the entire menu of food, going through it with every single chef, having to, you know where the vegetables were coming from, you know, like that kind of thing. I had that experience from the ground up, and it was really cool walking into a place and seeing it for the first time and actually seeing how it buzzes, especially in the first like couple months.
Yeah.
You know, every time it's a new restaurant, everybody wants to be there.
Yeah.
It's amazing.
Well, you know? give me the, you know, the, I would not be doing my job if I didn't ask for parallels, right?
Yeah.
You've been through the opening of a couple of restaurants that have been successful. Maybe one hasn't been as successful,
mm-hmm.
but you've done that both on your own.
Yeah.
Opening yourself up to judgment and criticism
through
lots of preparation. And then you've done it with more than one group.
Yeah.
But your current group, I'm going to confess to being fascinated by, what is a very, very current, respectful take on, on what I refer to as sort of a soul, Philly soul sound.
Yeah, kind of a classic sound. Yeah,
it really is. But it's by no means retro.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, it's pretty amazing to hear the influences on it. But so give me the parallels.
I would say definitely when you are thinking of putting out a record into the world that you may have been working on. I'm going to actually go with what's happening now, say with a sophomore record.
Yeah,
and, you know,
right.
Say a chef that is known for a particular style in a food world,
right.
in an industry, and they slightly change that for their next place.
Because
they're confident in it. And then you also have to grow. You
right.
can't just do the same thing over and over again.
Exactly.
If you want to develop yourself as anything.
Right.
Especially creatively. Some people like it. Some people like change. Some people don't know how to deal with change. You know, and some people are disappointed by it. And some people are like, oh my God, this is the best thing that ever happened.
Right.
You know.
But you're doing it for you.
You're
right?
doing it
I mean,
for you,
you
at the end
have,
of the day.
Right, when you've got a creative soul, you've got to feed it, and you have to feed it.
You have to.
Yes.
Because
exactly.
I feel like if in any industry, especially creative, if you do everything for everyone else,
bingo,
you're always going to fail.
Yeah.
Because you're never going to be satisfied if somebody doesn't like it, you know? So you have to do things for yourself.
I think you'd be surprised how much you sound like a chef right now. When I work, as you know, I work with a lot of chefs and a lot of creative folks. And one name in particular that I'm gonna mention to you, Aaron McKenna, who founded the Baby Cakes gluten-free bake shop. It's almost word for word her sensibility on what she had to do.
Yeah.
And that while she hoped everyone would like it, she knew in her soul that she had done something that pleased herself and that she did it with quality. She did it with integrity and could go to bed even if it didn't work to the public and say, I know that I did something good here. Your first album with Vitz, Picking Up the Pieces, got a lot of critical acclaim and the band got a lot of acclaim. You know, band to watch, you know, Rolling Stone magazine and Vogue and all of that. It even made a change. So let's keep with that parallel universe, right?
Yeah.
You had a management company that took a chance on a new band,
yeah.
And the band got really successful, and your management changed a little bit.
Yeah,
more
labor.
Than a little.
Yeah,
our right?
actual label.
Yeah.
We started off with a small independent label
mm-hmm.
out in our neighborhood, actually,
right.
where Fitz and I live in Silver Lake, called Danger Bird Records.
Mm-hmm.
The only label to really take a chance on us and, you know, give us the opportunity, seeing that we had worked as hard as we did, we were able to kind of grow our fan base organically. And they wanted to help us kind of, you know, build that. And they were phenomenal with, you know, for us and picking up the pieces,
yep.
especially with radio, because not only with them, we also had the program directors and, you know, the DJs that really loved and were really inspired by our story that they wanted to help us grow as well. So when the opportunity came along to actually, you know, move forward with a larger, you know, record company,
right.
it was really nice to actually, one, have the guy that signed us to Danger Bird move on as president
right.
of the label and bring us with him.
And that you know, yeah, obviously had a godfather that knew how this band needed to be treated.
Yeah, and it's been, you know, phenomenal with seeing the growth in just our team, you know, having an entire team around the world, you know, starting off with like maybe 10 people that were really grinding it out for us to, you know, I don't even know how many. I meet new people every day, and everybody seems to be very excited about this record, you know.
Well, why wouldn't they be? You know, we're not gonna cheat the people listening. We're gonna play a cut from it, and a cut that's been making the rounds. You're a foodie. I mean, we met over that. I mean, that was sort of an introduction. I got to see you perform. First, I think I saw you perform in Atlantic City. at a Dave Matthews event.
Yeah.
Which really, that caught my attention. As you said the words a moment ago, we worked so hard. And it is a very hard working show that you guys put on.
That's how I can eat as much as I
can. Fair enough. Well, I actually heard somebody ask you that once. Is that your exercise regimen up there? And you were so nice to look at them and say, well, not really, but okay.
It works out. Yeah, it works out.
So that's when I started to tell people, hey, there's a band you got to hear. And again, I felt a kinship to the Philadelphia sort of bass. You know, I loved the Hall & Oates Blue Eyed Soul. And of course, you can't hear Fitz without thinking, you know, of Hall & Oates.
Yeah.
And you can't, frankly, I can't listen to him without thinking of Todd Rundgren. Mm. A guy that doesn't get nearly enough attention paid for really pioneering some of that, that soul. I know Jack is looking at his watch, and that means we're going to take a short break. I don't usually like to take a break because I'm having so much fun, but this time we're going to take a break with Noel's co-wrote.
Yeah.
Song off of the new album, More Than Just a Dream. The song is called Out of My League. And I will not make a pun. That was Out of My League, written by Noel Skaggs.
and Fitz and the Tantrums
from More Than Just a Dream, the new album out. And Again, Phil Colicchio is here with the Business of the Business. We're taking a little detour today, talking about the entertainment industry with Noel Skaggs. Happens to have this great new album out. Also happens to be an incredibly articulate person in the linguistics of food and beverage. We were chatting a little bit earlier about the unique platform that you have as an entertainer that tours regularly to experience hospitality in its various forms.
Yeah.
Good and bad, I'm sure.
Yeah.
What has blown you away? I know one thing that hasn't blown you away, and we're going to talk about that.
He's going to throw me under the bus.
No. We're going to give you a chance to redeem. But how have you experienced it from a humorous way, from a way that you'd say, gosh, I would never do that, or from a way that said, wow, this is really fantastic?
It's interesting. Being one, a touring musician, it is often really hard to find really good food. You know, you kind of have to make it a point to go and look for places.
Yep.
Yelp, Urban Spoon, all of these new, you know, gadgets I've been able to kind of use to find restaurants. And now befriending chefs and different restaurateurs and you know, and having their recommendations and food writers. I think with the touring, it's enabled me to meet all of these different walks of life. Yeah. And things that I'm very interested in, namely food in that way. You know, from being able to come here to New York and calling you up and saying, Phil, where should we go?
Right.
And, you know, having something taken care of, you know, taken care of for me and my friends,
right,
is a really nice opportunity to say to my friends, these are some of the perks that you can have.
Yeah.
And then also on the flip side, being able to just walk into a place for the first time and, you know, having the locals say, this is the best burger joint in town.
Right.
And writing it down and sitting down and having an amazing experience with the local side, right, of it, and being able to have a conversation with, you know, the chef at the end of it, you,
right,
know, and then later them coming to your show. That's always
really, well, and, great, you know what, chef, you know, chefs dig it. We yeah, we talked about the process, and I think that every chef will acknowledge that the process of creating a dish and the process of writing a song do have similarities.
Oh yeah,
quite a bit. And I've always, again, as the person who helps take care of the business side of the chef's lives and of the restaurateurs' lives and of some entertainers' lives.
Yeah.
I've grown to appreciate what goes into it. I've grown to appreciate what people don't see.
Oh, yeah.
And
yeah,
so back again to your experience opening, being on a team, opening a restaurant, how much gets done behind the scenes that,
oh,
go,
wow,
into that finished product, right?
I mean
hours and years.
So much time. I mean, even just from, you know, the beginning of the training, sometimes you can go through weeks, depending on the place.
Yeah.
Weeks of training just for the menu, you know, depending,
right,
on how big it is, how often they change it.
Right.
You know.
So then when you do that, but compare that to when you bring a, yeah, new song or a set of songs into your stage act.
Yeah.
How much practice does it...
It depends. It depends,
yeah,
on the song,
yeah,
and depends on the group of people that you're working with as well. You know, I've been,
well, your group right, yeah, now. We'll stick with that.
Fantastic group of musicians. You know, I can probably count on my hands how many times we've actually rehearsed.
Mm.
But as far as the songwriting process is concerned, every single song has gone through so many changes. You know, Out of My League, for instance, started off as a ballad, and then, you know, got fine tuned into more of an up tempo thing. Then our producer got, you know, there, his hands on it, and, you know, added the extra salt and pepper and whatever else we needed.
Right.
So it became this really cool collaborative effort. And I feel like with food, when especially, you know, the chefs, right, that I know, it always goes through that process. You know, you have something,
yep,
you're trying out, you let your friends try it. Everybody kind of throws in there, like,
your trusted friends.
Yeah, your trusted,
right,
friends.
Your trusted,
not
friends,
everybody.
Right.
You,
right,
know, your trusted friends, and, you know, you kind of get their opinion and what they think and their reaction before they even say anything,
right,
what their reaction is just by looking at them.
And before you put it out to the public,
yeah,
you really spend a lot of alone time, a lot of modification. Then you put it out and you get judged.
Yeah.
Have you gotten over the fact that every time you get up and do your work every day, you're being judged?
Oh, absolutely.
You're over, you're past that?
I don't think you really get past it. You know, when you do anything creatively, it's from the heart, or at least you hope so. with people that are giving you things.
It is.
It is really from the heart. And anytime someone either misinterprets or they have their own, you know, perception of what it was supposed to be,
and
it may not necessarily be favorable, it does hit you, you know, and it's hard not to become like defensive of your baby in some way.
You better be.
Yeah.
You know, you better
absolutely.
Be. So again, I want to stick with this theme because it's I'm finding fun parallels for myself. I'm doing this show for myself, if you can tell. So I'm having a little fun with it. So it takes sometimes a year to sort of get the dream of the restaurant. I signed the lease and then I've got to fit it out and design it and I've got to do all of that stuff. And then it was maybe a year, maybe more to my vision. How long did it take to put more than just a dream together as an album?
I mean, we wrote about 35 to 40 songs within, I would say, a good like 3 month period. Then it took another three to kind of get it going. And then we were still writing, you know, and still fine tuning. And then through this whole process of changing the team and moving on, you know, it gave us some time to kind of actually breathe and have a break. Cause I mean, we toured for 3 years
ever,
you know, and we worked the first record for nearly two,
right.
You know, so there are a lot of parallels as far as like the creative process.
Right.
Some records can take years, you know, some records can take 6 months.
There you go. I mean, I pay attention. I've heard artists say that sometimes records write and record themselves. You listen to Neil Young and he'll tell you that, you know, I've got 8 albums in my head from last month, you know, that I can record. And then there are the, you know, there are the stories like Bruce Springsteen and Born to Run being something that was years in the making, even though he was a very young man when he wrote those songs. We're on the radio, so people cannot see you. I have been able to see. It has to be said that one of the great things about seeing your band, you know, is the stark physical contrast between you and Fitz.
Yeah.
I mean, you are, it's part of the show. Tell me, you know, I have to at least ask about the meeting. I learned you really only know him since 2009.
Yeah.
And it's shocking because you appear to be separated at birth kind of people on stage. And how did, was that an immediate connection you had with the guy?
I can honestly say yes.
Yeah.
You know, the very first rehearsal that we'd all done together, it was very magical in that way. There was a synergy that, you know, is really hard to find when you're entering into a band situation, especially for me where I was kind of changing platforms and not necessarily being the lead singer of the band, but coming in as like kind of a support system.
Right.
And then it kind of, you know, fine tuning itself and turning into what it is now.
Did they know they needed you before they met you?
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah.
I mean,
I feel
like Fitz already kind of knew what he wanted.
Yeah.
And, you know, his request was with James is like, I need a female, you know, kind of counterpart for this project. Do you have anybody in mind? And James, my name popped up on the phone. It was the first one. And he's like, oh my God, Noelle, call her.
Wow.
You know, so it kind of worked out in that way. But the magic, I think, was there from the beginning. I think we all kind of knew it.
Yeah.
You know, it's like the very first time you eat, like, I have to talk about a scallop that I had recently.
Let's talk about
it.
In where?
LA. I went to actually a pop-up that was created by a group of chefs. There were about 4 of them. One of them was Jamie Bisonet, who's out of Boston, who's going to be opening up a couple restaurants here in Manhattan.
Really?
As well.
Out of Boston.
Uh-huh.
Hardest place in the world to run a restaurant.
And another gentleman by the name of Viet Pham. Now, Viet created this scallop that I have photos of. I'll show it to you later.
Okay.
It was the most mind-blowing experience that I've had with any scallop. You know, and I've had some really good scallops, but Colt, you know, just it was amazing. Melt
give it
in
up.
Your
how
mouth.
Was the preparation? Was it?
It was cold.
So it was
served
sort of,
cold.
Right,
had a citrus vibe to it.
Okay.
Also had juniper flour was a part of the recipe. It was very simple. Mm-hmm. And
was it served in a sushi style or was it?
It was served as a sushi style.
Okay.
Yeah. I hadn't had one like that. I mean, most of the scallops I've had have been seared. You know,
well, the seared scallop is a tried and true moneymaker.
Yes,
I have to say that, right? You know, there's an economic component to the show that you know we dig into on a weekly basis, and you know, we talk about what works and what doesn't from an economic standpoint in the restaurant industry. In your industry,
yeah,
how did the economics come into play right away when you joined the band? Was it sort of like, okay, we got a salary negotiation here, or was that all secondary stuff?
No, it was, you know, it's pretty much secondary. Mm-hmm. I mean, once you really start going with any project, after a while, you got to make money in order to, because one, you have to be 100% committed.
Yes.
To a situation like this.
We call it economic sustainability.
Exactly. Exactly. So you do have to, you know, whether it's doing shows, you got to, you know, pay the guys, or we got to figure out how we're going to be able to kind of sustain ourselves, how we're going to pay our rent, especially if we're going to go on tour.
And you have a business plan. I mean, you got that whole, I mean, that's where the support system comes in, right?
You have this kind of like unspoken, you know, business plan. I think the agreement kind of comes in later, mm-hmm. depending, you know, whether or not the band stays together and, you know, this is what we kind of have to do, especially when it comes to songwriting and, you know, stuff like that. You kind of have to have some form of agreement.
Right.
So everybody feels like they're a part of it and they're not being looked over, and you can sustain yourself later.
Right.
Where was I going with this?
We were going on you were talking about the economics and the economics of the scallop.
Yes.
And how the cost
of the food.
Yeah. and the cost of the music, you know, none of this stuff can happen unless we all take good hard economic looks at what we're, you know, what we're,
I mean,
doing.
We were very,
and managing it correctly.
Yeah. I mean, we were very fortunate that, you know, Fitz was able to kind of make a good amount of income in writing, you know, songs for advertising and stuff like that. So
really?
He was able to kind of fund the project in the beginning.
Didn't know that.
And it helped, you know.
Yeah.
It really did help out. But
what was it? Come on, give me a jingle.
Oh,
come on. It must be one that he did.
I don't know. Purina? Purina may have been one
of
them. He has his own, you know, own advertising song like company that he had started.
I hope you'll
drop
one of those into one of your performances. I think that would be great fun. Don't ask me why it sticks in my head, but it sticks in my head that's exactly the way Barry Manilow started. he was the Like a Good Neighbor, State Farm is there guy, right? So look, again, created opportunity for him, right?
Mm-hmm.
All right, we can't let you go without a couple of quick, you know, shotgun things, okay?
Yes.
So right to your head. All right.
All right.
Favorite New York restaurant?
Oh, my. Oh, God. Come back to that one.
So far. All right. Favorite L.A. restaurant?
Favorite L.A. restaurant, I would have to say, is Angelini Osteria, which is an Italian restaurant in L.A. It's phenomenal.
Dynamite. Sticking with the hospitality theme, where's the coolest hotel that you've been put up in recently?
The Nomad.
Yeah.
In New York City. Yeah.
Terrific.
Yeah.
That's a pretty amazing place.
It's a really awesome hotel.
Doesn't that make you scratch your head and say, somebody thought of this?
Yes.
Right. There's a lot of creativity in that.
It's really
what
brilliant.
Did we say? It's a lounge with bedrooms, right?
Oh, yeah.
There you go.
Oh,
right.
Yeah.
All right. And favorite city that you've toured in?
Paris.
Oh, wow.
I mean, I have a huge love for France in general, and I've been to Paris quite a bit, and it's still one of my favorite cities to go to.
Well, terrific.
Yeah.
Well, one last question.
Mm-hmm.
Favorite pizza in New York?
I don't have one yet. That's what he's going to throw me under the bus for. I have yet to have a pizza in New York that's blown my mind.
Well,
I am a skeptic.
Well, we're wrapping up our show for today. And one of the great honors that I have as a host here at the Heritage Radio Network is introducing people to Roberta's Pizza.
Okay.
I said, so we're going to do that.
All right.
And I want to thank Noelle Skaggs for coming in here today. Noelle is the co-lead singer of Fitz and the Tantrums. Their new album, More Than Just a Dream, is out right now. You can download it. You can buy it. Is there vinyl?
There is vinyl.
Yeah, you can get it on vinyl, which is probably the way to listen to it, to be perfectly blunt. Their song, Out of My League, took us into our break today. Now I'm going to make the pun. I am out of my league sitting here with you. I'm thrilled to have had you.
Thank
Let's go
you
get
very
that
much.
Pizza and
All right.
blow you away.
Thank you.